Okay, today is November 8th, 2018, Board of Equalization. The time is 9:03. This is set for petition DE-2018-31. It's for parcel 1193-41025. The taxpayer is Colbia Washington LLC. The agent who has been acting on their behalf, Gail Stack from Everstar Realty, is not present at the time. We do have Nikki Morgan representing the assessor's office. And this petition is scheduled for 30 minutes. And so we will have Nikki begin with 10 minutes. And then if Ms. Stack arrives, we can then have her do her evidence, highlight her points. And then we will have 10 minutes afterwards for rebuttal and questions from the board. And Linda Mays is the chairman.
Okay. Good morning and welcome to the Franklin Board, County Board of Equalization. The board members are Alicia Greenaway, Joel Christ, and me, Linda Mays, as chairman. Our clerk is Shirley Jones. The board is a quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with powers that are to some extent judicial, as those of certain federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. Our role is to review the facts presented by both parties and to determine the market value of the property as of January 1st of the assessment year. The law grants presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the petitioner to prove the assessment is incorrect. The hearing will be recorded and all testimony is under oath. Our clerk will now ask you to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath.
Okay, Nikki Morgan, you will be testifying today. Do you affirm that the testimony you will give will be the truth?
I do.
Following this hearing, the board will meet to weigh the evidence and make a final determination. We will issue a written decision to the appellant, which they should receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeals, and a notice of the appeal opportunity is at the bottom of the written decision. The board is in receipt of all documentary data provided by the appellant and the assessor, and we have reviewed it. Since the appellant is not present, we will ask the assessor to present her case. So please, Nikki, present. Start with your presentation.
Okay. So there is an overview under general description of the property. This is the Legacy Square Apartments in Huntsville. They were built in 1979. There are 2 3-story buildings that are 27,900 square foot each. And there's also a clubhouse and an office attached. It's 944 square feet. It's got an in-ground swimming pool. 52 units total. And then you have a unit breakdown. 2 studio, 31 bedroom, 22 bedrooms, and 4 3-bedroom units. The following pieces are appraisal methodology, and then after that, it's just the property characteristics. The next page is the sketch of the property. So again, this is the base floor plan, but they're 3 stories tall. The units total of the clubhouse. The next pieces are photos of the different buildings. And then a picture of their the clubhouse facility and the swimming pool. Next page is the aerial overview where they sit on the property and the street corner that they're on. This property was valued according to the income approach. So the following page is that worksheet. And you have the unit count breakdown up above with the studios through the 3 bedrooms, according to how many units there are and rents at the top of the page. The market information was used rather than actuals for this property. The actuals were provided to me and were a little bit lower than what was typical. I did work with Gail during the 30-day period and realized that the actual rents were a little lower than what was typical for the market due to size. So these are almost the smallest apartment units in Pasco. So an adjustment was made to the value at that time. the appeal was after that adjustment. So we did do a correction to value to take into consideration smaller unit size and smaller rents available. We went ahead and used market for operating expenses, which were pretty similar to their actuals, and came up with the indicated value of $5,277,886. The first page was the market. The second page is taking into consideration the contract information. So we offered the lowered value of $4.4 million. And I apologize that there's no page number on that one, but it's the second income approach page. Mm-hmm. So when we offered the $4,453,929, the owner was not agreeable to that, although Gail thought it was pretty fair. We did not make a correction and send out the notice. We just let them go ahead and appeal. I would be recommending the $4,453,900 for the assessed value. The following pages are all of the market data that we collected and sent values to the income approach. The first sheet is the sales ratio page, indicating our new assessed values for the apartments in all areas. And they are broken down by area. So the top portion there is the Central East Pasco apartments that have sold with an average ratio of 83%. And then the lower part of the page is the West Central with their sales ratio of 95%. And overall sales ratio for apartments in Pasco came in at 90%.
Goodness.
The subject is in the West Central, so the lower portion with a little bit higher ratio. And then the next page is kind of just for your reference. These are the indicated rents that we came up with that were typical for market. Using the sales, the income and expense questionnaires that we mailed out and had returned. And then to come up with the market expenses, the same thing on the following page. Just what typical expenses were for the different types of units according to the actual information that was sent to us. Hmm. And then that last page is the cap rates. So using the market data that we collected, looking at recent sales prices, coming up with cap rates for the area, and that is recent income approach.
Nikki?
Yes.
What for the rents? I didn't see anything for rents provided by the appellant.
They did not turn them in with the Board of Equalization packet. Gail Stack emailed them to me, but she never submitted them as evidence.
Okay, so what, looking at page, where you listed all of these rents here, this one here,
mm-hmm.
What is the average? I didn't catch that. What was the, did you come up with an average for each section?
Correct. Yeah, and those are indicated. So if you go to the second income approach page, they're near the end, just before the sales ratio sheet.
So she's looking
for that one.
So the indicated value at the bottom of $4.4 million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here you have the actual rents, the contract units under income source. So the number on the left is
see the difference?
Actual of 525 for a studio.
That's significantly.
Where the typical market rent for a studio in Pasco is 650.
That's significantly less.
It's significantly less. And I did question Gail on that. That's when we kind of looked at the square footage for the units, and these are very small. Not just the studios, but overall, they're collecting less than market.
Okay.
So that's why we use the contract and an indicated new value.
Right.
So I would be recommending the $4,453,900.
And that's the other thing I wanted to ask. You said the assessor total $5,277,000, and you said $886,000. However, on your documentation, you said $900,000.
It rounds.
So what's the correct amount then? What's the correct amount that you want to show?
The current assessed value is $5,277,900.
$900,000, okay.
And our system does round. I wouldn't be able to put in a value of $4,453,929.
Yeah.
It would make it $4,453,900.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Nikki, just a question for you. Understanding, because you're using the market approach, you determine a total value, then you basically back out the cost of the land. to get the improvement?
Correct.
Number?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Any more questions?
No. I'm good.
Okay. Since the appellant did not appear, the appellant stated on, I guess it's her petition, their petition, that they would be submitting additional documentary evidence to the board and the assessor no later than 21 business days prior to the hearing. However, in the packet, there is no evidence provided, additional evidence provided. So all we have to look at is the petition, which consists of 3 pages, and there's no additional evidence. Read which one?
The statement that she wrote on number 4, just so we have that.
Where's that?
Yeah.
Okay. Excuse me. The appellant wrote the specific reasons why they believe the assessor's value does not reflect the true and fair market value. Statement is, I believe the assessor did not consider the size of the individual units, age, and style of the property when arriving at the fair market value. Based on the current rent roll and operating expenses, the market value at 7% cap rate is $3,765,000. Okay. Thank you, Nikki.
The time is 9:14, and we will continue this hearing. CE 2018-31, proposal 1134105, taxpayer Colvia Washington, LLC. And we will take a slight recess here, beginning again at 9:30. Would you guys like to deliberate? Time is 9:33. This is to begin petition BE 2018-32 for parcel 1254-50048. Taxpayer Tom and Vicki Solbrack et al. Representing would be Christopher and Heather Butcher. At the moment, Mr. Butcher is not present. What we will do, representing the assessor's office, is Brian Moneymaker and Pete McIndorfer. This is a commercial petition, so this petition is scheduled to last for 30 minutes. And with the appellant not being present, we will read the statement off of the petition, and then the appraiser will have 10 minutes to highlight points of the evidence that they have provided. And then the last 10 minutes will be for rebuttal and questions from the board.
Good morning and welcome to the Franklin County Board of Equalization. The board members are Alicia Greenaway, Joe Christ, and me, Linda Mays, is chairman. Our clerk is Shirley Jones. The board is a quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with powers that are to some extent judicial, as those of certain federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. Our role is to review the facts presented by both parties and determine the market value of the property as of January 1st of the assessment year. The law grants presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the petitioner to prove the assessment is incorrect. This hearing will be recorded and all testimony is under oath. Our clerk will ask you now to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath.
Do each of you who will be testifying today affirm that the testimony you will give will be the truth?
I do.
Following this hearing, the board will meet to weigh the evidence and make a final determination. We will issue a written decision to you, which you should receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeals, and a notice of the appeal opportunity is at the bottom of the written decision. The board is in receipt of all documentary data provided by you and the assessor, and we have reviewed it. Since the appellant is not present, I will read the appellant's petition, and then the assessor will present his case. So, information from the taxpayer petition to the County Board of Equalization, the taxpayer states, and his specific reasons why He believes the assessor's value does not reflect the true and fair market value. His statement is, our storage location is not in a prime storage market. Can't read that
area.
Word.
Area.
What is
area.
It? Area. Other comparable buildings are in areas more conducive to use and marketability, thus increasing their value over our buildings. He submitted an estimate of true and fair value of the land of $35,000, the improvements slash buildings of $750,000 to our total value of $785,000. So the assessor may now proceed with his case.
Okay, first of all, the sales report that we had sent out, that was as of the sale date, and this is an update that we produced that has just the ratio, the updated value ratio.
Current
for 2019.
While Brian's passing those out, in 2017, we mailed out questionnaires to all the potato shed owners to verify the tonnage of the sheds, any condition issues with the sheds. Characteristics of the shed, meaning did it have ventilation only? Did it have controlled atmospheric? Could they store onions in there? We mailed out a survey to all the shed owners and received those back. And this is the one we received from the appellant. One thing we did learn is most of the market as potato sheds are valued on the tonnage. Leased on the tonnage, sold on the tonnage, which we learned a few years ago. The only issue with tonnage is tonnage seems to be somewhat of a variable number depending on what you are storing and how long you're storing it. So just on the appellant's survey that they sent back, the tonnage is determined by the length, the width, and the pile height. And pile height can vary based upon what it is you're storing, onions or potatoes. So the storage capacity indicated on the appellant's, the pile height is somewhere between 18 to 22 feet. The storage capacity is between 9 to 10,000 tons. Unless storing fresh potatoes, and then it's 8,000 to 9,000 tons. We valued the subject property at 10,000 tons based upon a tonnage rate that reduced on the age of the shed. So the older the shed, the less per ton of market value. The other thing is, too, that we asked if there was any deferred maintenance, and on the appellant's survey that was submitted in May of 2017, it said, yes, we are repairing the roof this year, sometime this year, estimated cost of $120,000. So for the 18 tax, we reduced the value of the property, of the shed, for that cost to cure, and the work has been completed. And that was the reason why the value changed it from 18 to 19, was that cost to cure, the work had been completed, and removed that adjustment. So.
Like you were saying, we value it on a per ton basis, all of them, and really, if you want to look at one sale in particular, that is relevant, I mean, the most relevant. It's sale number three. It's literally about 10 miles away, not even that, 8 miles away. And as far as size, everything is similar. Both sale number three and the appellant are west of Connell.
So the appellant's located about here.
Okay.
And then the sale that we're talking about is on Dilling Road, and Dilling Road is over closer towards Connell, right over in this area.
Okay.
So this would be Highway 17,
okay,
which goes down the hill, and then here you can hook up with highway, another highway that hooks into 20, into 17, so
24.
Yeah. That's the location of those properties and to each other.
And you know, he discusses the marketability, and if you look at, he's only 10 miles from Othello, and they have processing plants there. The same thing with Connell. They have a very large processing plant there. So, you know, the way sale number three was sold was the same idea, that, you know, they're close to processing, whether they go up to Othello or they go just into Connell. You know, there's a lot of potato ground up in that north end. So, you know, they do have proximity to processing. He also talks about how he's a little bit lower for his income than the market. That's a management decision. If he was going to sell, he's going to make sure, I mean, somebody's going to buy it on the maximum potential rent that they can receive. So if he's going to sell it, he's going to sell it that way. Mm-hmm. As shown by sale number three, you know, as a matter of fact, sale number three is, you know, it's a very good comp, and we're at 87% on the ratio on that one. Current value for 2019 tax.
And what is the ratio, sorry, Brian, on the appellants? Because it's not showing me that.
Well, he hasn't, that's the sale ratio.
Oh,
that does do it. Yeah.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay.
Sorry about
thank
that.
You. That's okay. I was going, okay, I'm seeing ratio.
No, we got it. No, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for pointing that out.
The other thing I would, looking at the appellant's information that they submitted, they've got a 5-year lease on this property. Potatoes are grown on a rotation. So obviously, the person who's renting this facility has a need for long-term storage, meaning they are actively growing potatoes on an annual basis. It's not like a single farmer that's growing spuds 1 year and then going to a rotational crop and then just spuds on the fourth or fifth year. So to have a 5-year lease, I think would indicate you could take a lower market rent. You are constantly, every year, trying to find a new tenant. The other thing is, too, the less the person leasing the shed would tend to have a contract with one of these processing plants to provide potatoes to them, ensuring that they need a place to store them. So I think it's probably mutually beneficial to both the person leasing and the landlord here in this kind of a long-term agreement for that shed. So the other thing is, too, Dilling Road, the Dilling Road sale, that is just a ventilation-only shed, just like the subject property. And that does influence market value. It would influence the amount of rent that could be received, because the longer you can store your potatoes, the longer you can hold them, wait the market out, or deliver to your client, the person mm-hmm. you have the contract, when they want those potatoes. So I think sale number three would be the best indicator of value, and especially in light of the roof being repaired and refinished in the 5-year lease.
So you're basing your assessment on sales?
We're basing our assessment on sales.
Yep.
The income approach, we did not do an income approach on the potato sheds. Frankly, it's hard just to get storage capacity out from the grow, you know. And then to get lease information and try and do an income approach is very difficult.
Yeah, and getting the cap rate is a moving target. Yeah.
So one of my questions was that about the location.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering where this was, but you've answered the question.
Right.
The sale number, subject and sale number three are like 8 miles apart from each other, and the thing is to be closer to the potato facility, processing facility. And they're, how close are they to that, both of them?
There, this is, lies about 10 miles south of Othello.
Yeah.
So it depends where the person who has the potatoes in there, where they're shipping them to.
Yeah.
So if you had a contract with one of those northern processors, that would be a, mm-hmm. yeah, you're going to be looking in northern Franklin yeah. County or southern Adams County mm-hmm. or in Grant County for shed storage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that all depends on who's leasing it. The other thing is, too, they might be looking at it from the standpoint of if they're growing in that area, they can take them right to the shed, and they might have a little more cost, you know, getting them to the processing plants down here, but it might be more convenient to their operation up there.
Mm-hmm.
So those are questions we don't have the answers to. So.
Okay.
Any more questions?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
This concludes petition BE-2018-32 for parcel 1254-50048. Taxpayer Tom and Vicki Goldrack et al. And the taxpayer was not able to attend. This concludes. We will then be back at 10:20 for the next petition. In the recording here, the time is 10:19, and we have Mr. Thomas Burke on the phone. This would be for petition BE-2018-34, parcel 10983149. Taxpayer is Connell LLC. And again, the agent for Connell is Mr. Thomas Burke. And also in attendance, we have Nikki Morgan and Pete McIndrucker representing the assessor's office. This is a commercial petition, and it is scheduled for 30 minutes. The appellant and the appraiser will each have 10 minutes to highlight points of the evidence they have provided, and then the last 10 minutes will be for rebuttal and questions. Linda Mays is our chairman, and she will begin.
Good morning, Mr. Burke, and welcome to the Franklin County Board of Equalization. The board members are Alicia Greenaway, Joe Christ, and me. Linda Mays is chairman. Our clerk is Shirley Jones. This board is a quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with powers that are to some extent judicial, as those of certain federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. Our role is to review the facts presented by both parties and to determine the market value of the property as of January 1st of the assessment year. The law grants presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the petitioner to prove the assessment is incorrect. This hearing will be recorded and all testimony is under oath. Our clerk will now ask you to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath.
Do each of you who will be testifying today affirm that the testimony you will give will be the truth?
I do.
Mr. Burke, thank you.
Following this hearing, the board will need to weigh the evidence and make a final determination. We will issue a written decision to you which you should receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeals, and a notice of the appeal opportunity will be at the bottom of the written decision. This board is in receipt of all documentary data provided by you and the assessor, and we have reviewed it. You will present your case first, Mr. Burke, and then the assessor will present her case. And one additional note that I'd like to read to you. Regarding your notice of objection, striking timely filed evidence from the record is outside the jurisdiction of this board. So please, Mr. Burke, start with your presentation of your case.
Thank you very much. May it please the board, I would just like to note an exception to the board's decision denying jurisdiction of the motion to strike for the assessor's failure to provide proper information according to statute and WAC. I understand that, but I just want to make that clear that I do not agree.
Okay.
The issue that we have with respect to Con LLC is the abrupt and amazing increase in the value that we believe is based on insufficient information. The history of the assessor and the documents that I have submitted to you, the improvement value reports from the year 2014 through the year 2018 are all remarkably consistent with an assessed value of $325,300. And in fact, the documents note that there was a physical inspection of the property by the assessor's office in 2017, and the 2018 valuation was not changed. Then for the 2019 valuation, apparently the assessor's office switched gears and decided to use a income approach based on what they alleged to be a mass appraisal procedure based on mailings that were sent out. Now, they most certainly have the right to do a reevaluation. They're supposed to do it every year. They most certainly have a right to use an income approach. That is clear in the statute and the WAC. However, it has to be valid and it has to be based in fact. For example, the assessor filed a reevaluation plan with the State Department of Revenue, and I have submitted a copy of that to the board to review. And what I find most interesting in that is the report specifically asks the assessor to disclose what is the method of valuation and what is the statistical basis for your evaluation. Those are questions 8 and 9. And the assessor simply didn't respond. He didn't say what or the statistical basis was or anything that could be used to validate his assessment procedures. What they have submitted to the board in support of this $780,000 reassessment, which is more than double what it has been for the past 5 years, is a set of what they call rents collected via questionnaire. I mean, this is the basis for their assessment of the amount due and the levy. They don't say how many questionnaires they sent out or to who, but their 217 rents collected via questionnaire itemizes three samples. Three buildings, one built in 1900, one built in 1970, and one built in 1996, that are 6, 22, and 53 units respectively, and the only description is that they're in average quality or fair condition and that they're outside town's rule. Without any further information, the petitioner is completely unable to attack the credibility of this, other than that a statistical sample of three from somewhere in the county is not a good representative of the income that is potential. The other mistake that they made is their cap rate calculations. Capitalization rate is perfectly acceptable in terms of evaluating income approach to appraisals. However, their list of comparable cap rates that they use to define the overall average of 7% are all from Central East Pasco. They are not from rural areas. They are not from Connell or any of the surrounding areas. All of these samples that they want to use to base their cap rate are in a completely different and not comparable situation. They are in an urban area, not a rural area. They don't have any penitentiary in Pasco. There's a number of factors that would weigh and should have weighed in them making their assessment. The supplemental income and loss document that I provided for the Connell apartments to show the income and expenses shows the actual, not the projected or whatever the assessor decided to assign, income and losses, and the net is $34,126. That is very different than the $55,080 that the income approach for the assessor uses, and wildly different than the $178,800 that they use on their contract amount. This is from their income approach worksheet. Because they are comparing apples to oranges, apricots, and peanuts, this cannot stand. This is not a fair appraisal, and we would ask that the board deny the revaluation and continue the prior evaluations of $325,300 for the year 2019. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Burns. Thank you.
Hi, Nikki Morgan, and I will start it on my package. As you'll know from page one, this is the apartments in Connell. There are 7 square quality multifamily buildings totaling 13,204 square feet, and they were built in 1954. We were informed after the preparation of my packet that the unit count that we had historically on this parcel was incorrect. So after making the adjustment, the board should have received my amended value dated October 31st, recommending the value at $777,600. Okay. So rather than the $786,900 listed on the petition, the recommended assessed value due to that correction of unit count is $777,600. So proceeding, then the unit count listed on page 1, it would be incorrect because my packet was done beforehand. Pages 2 and 3 are a brief description of our appraisal methodology, outlining the fact that we are required to be at 100% of market value every year. So we do adjust statistically, and then on the 6th year we do the physical inspection and a whole new appraisal. Pages 4, 5, 6 and 7 are the characteristics of the property, noting land size, the different buildings. They're all built in 1954. They're all in fair quality, fair condition. Then attached are also the sketches of the different buildings. So jumping to page 15, you have photographs of the buildings. Mm-hmm. And 16 would be just the aerial view. Your properties and where they lay in Connell. Page 17 is our commercial improved ratio, meaning other than vacant land, improved commercial properties in the county, with a median ratio of 94%, indicating that overall we're 94% of recent sales prices. And page 18 is the income report worksheet. Again, this is indicating the non-adjusted value. If you're looking in the packet itself, The adjustment was emailed to the board, so I'm not sure which one you'd like to reference. And if you have the email in front of you, I can speak to the recommended value. Contract information was requested multiple times, and we did receive the tax return, but at no point did I receive individual rents per unit type. So we did proceed with market information on this. So you can see that the unit counts were fixed to 13 one-bedroom, 10 two-bedroom units, and 1 3-bedroom unit. Market rent and expense information was used, indicating the $777,600. Page 19 is just the request for information from the appellant. 20, as indicated by the appellant, were the rents collected in the area, indicating what was market for the rural type properties. And as far as the cap rate sheet on page 20, there are fewer apartment complexes out in Colorado for the authority, so we did receive less information back than we did with Pasco. We're going to use the information that we have, since there are less apartment complexes, there are less sales, and there just weren't any in the area that could give us an indicated cap rate. And with mass appraisal, we made the appraisal judgment to use the 7% for the entire area.
Okay. Anything else? Okay. Any rebuttal, Mr. Burke?
Mr. Burke, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Do you have any rebuttal to that, Mr. Burke?
So I would like to point out that the map that I have from the assessor's revaluation plan that is part of my materials lists the various inspection areas and reveal areas, and it's very clear from that map that the urban Pasco area is wildly different, even by their own admission, in terms of value. And they say that this area 6 is agricultural, and whereas the areas around Pasco are urban. Again, I get where they're coming from, but the request for information that they sent out does not indicate that if you don't respond and you don't give us specific information on your rent values, that we will make something up. The statute allows the assessor to compel apartment or commercial property owners to reveal that kind of information in aid of assessment. They didn't do that, and they haven't complied with the statute as far as their duties are concerned, and I do believe that this revaluation should be denied. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions from the board?
Joe?
Yeah, what was the reason for moving from a cost-based approach to a market-based approach between 2018 and 2019?
It's appropriate with an income-producing property to use the income approach. If we don't have any information, then we're not going to make something up, and the cost approach is considered trustworthy. We do make market adjustments when looking at ratios in the area and sales of properties in the area, but when we have significant income information and can use that, that is the correct approach to use.
The other thing is too, we knew from looking at the multifamily sales countywide, the most predictable methodology of estimating the market value was to use the income approach. Request was sent out to all the multifamily property owners in the county, city of Pasco, and Franklin County, requesting specific information as to the rents of each unit, the unit counts, and a breakdown of specific expenses. In the absence of data provided by the appellant,
or any property owners, we are forced to estimate. And we will estimate and apply the most appropriate methodology of the three approaches to valuation that we consider best reflects the market value.
So I guess my question is, why aren't we having this conversation last year? Was there not enough information last year to make a market-based decision? I know we're pulling up.
That would be correct, yes.
And this year you felt you did have enough information.
Well, as we go through our revaluation cycle, there can be specific property types that we have concerns with that we will look at on a overall basis, being either multifamily or manufactured homes in a rural area, something like that. We know we have an area of concern, and if we feel the need to address that, we will do that at that point, yes.
Mm-hmm. So, Pete?
Yes, ma'am.
Page 18 of your petition?
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at the top, and I'm just trying to clarify this in my mind. Mr. Rick, this is Linda Mays talking. The contract amount of $550 for a one-bedroom unit there at the top of the page, that's the contract. That's what does that mean?
No, this was before I had any contract information at all from the appellant. In the email from October 31st, you have a revised income sheet. This is the sheet that you need to reference.
Mm-hmm.
And it has...
Okay.
So updated unit counts. Unfortunately, in our computer system, when we put in these rents and unit types, we can't leave the contract amount blank for the rents. So I just match them to the market.
Okay.
I have to have a number there for it to generate. And so those should be blank because I never received an individual unit rent. We just got an example of one lease. So that doesn't tell me what all their different rents are for each unit, the difference between the 1, 2, and 3-bedroom rents. I wasn't able to fill out the contract information at all because all I had was a tax return and an example of one rent.
Okay.
So it's just the market side that's filled out.
And from that lease that was the lease agreement that was applied, you can't tell what that unit is.
Right.
If it's a 1, 2, or 3. The other thing is, too, I would like to point out that the appellant supplies no sales, no cap rate, or no market data whatsoever to substantiate any kind of reduction in the property.
Nikki, the correct amount, dollar amount for your assessment, your total is $777,600?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
600. Any more questions?
No.
Any more? Do you have any more questions, Mr. Burke?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
This concludes petition BE 2018-34 for parcel 10983119 for taxpayer Connell LLC. And we will resume at 10:50. It is now 10:40.
Hi, Kelsey. This is Shirley Jones, and we have the board present, and also we have Nikki Morgan from the assessor's office. And this is regarding petition BE 2018-16 for parcel 11220109. This is Southland Corporation, and then afterwards we also have BE 2018-17 for parcel 11915385. Also, taxpayer is Southland Corporation. What we will do is we will begin the first hearing, and should everything conclude with that hearing, we will immediately then go into the second. Here it is.
Okay. Okay, yes, that sounds good.
Okay, as far as each
particular petition. Each one is scheduled for 30 minutes. The appellant and the appraiser will each have 10 minutes to highlight points of the evidence they've provided, and the board has received all the evidence. The last 10 minutes will be for rebuttal and questions. Our chairman is Linda Mays, and she will begin.
Good morning. Is your last name, how do you pronounce your last name?
My last name is Dibert.
Dibert. Well, welcome, Ms. Dibert, to the Franklin County Board of Equalization. The board members are Alicia Greenaway, Joel Christ, and me, Linda Mays, as chairman. Our clerk is Shirley Jones. The board is a quasi-judicial body, which means having to do with powers that are to some extent judicial, as those of certain federal and state boards and commissions. The board and the assessor's office are independent of each other. Our role is to review the facts presented by both parties and to determine the market value of the property as of January 1st of the assessment year. The law grants presumption of correctness to the assessor. The burden is on the petitioner to prove the assessment is incorrect. This hearing will be recorded, and all testimony is under oath. Our clerk will now ask you to affirm your testimony by raising your right hand and taking the oath.
Do each of you who will be testifying today affirm that the testimony you will give will be the truth?
I do.
Following your hearing, the board will meet to weigh the evidence and make a final determination. We will issue a written decision to you, which you should receive within 4 weeks. The decision is appealable to the State Board of Tax Appeals, and a notice of the appeal opportunity is at the bottom of the written decision. The board is in receipt of all documentary data provided by you and the assessor, and we have reviewed it. You will present your case first, and then the assessor will present her case. So please begin, Ms. Dibert, with your case.
Sure. So we are looking at the 7-Eleven convenience store on 1504 West Sylvester Street. It was built in 1969, and the total net leasable area is 2,584 square feet. It looks like I'm using an effective age of 24 years, although the actual age of the store is 49. It doesn't look like there's been any recent improvements made to the store, but obviously the bug keep has gone on since 1969, hence the effective age of 24. So my first page is just a strict Marshall Swift cost approach. I didn't make any manual adjustments to this other than changing the effective age. So the depreciation is going to be based on an effective age of 24 years. So the first column is main improvements, top left. Going to be just the convenience store building itself. Straight line depreciation of 40% gives us a total cost depreciated of about $186,000. I also included asphalt paving as well as concrete paving right below that. So almost 9,000 square foot of asphalt coming in about $5,200 total cost depreciated, and then concrete paving of almost 550 square foot. After depreciation is an additional about $500. And then the canopy, this is really just the awning that goes around the convenience store. There is no canopy or gap at this location. So that 450 square foot of canopy, after depreciation, is contributing an additional $6,000. So to the right, you should see a little box that says my cost approach value. You total up the total cost depreciated of the convenience store, the paving, and then the canopy. I'm coming up with a total improvement value of $198,843. Add that to the land value, which was $72,500. Total Marshall and Swift cost approach value is indicating $271,300. And that is $104.99 a square foot. And we are currently assessed at $126 a square foot. So that's it for my Marshall and Swift cost. So you should have following that, it should be the map of my county retail sale comp from CoStar. And that should list out all seven comps. in like a list format. So that'll just show you some general property information, like the square footage. Since there weren't any sales of convenience stores, I just pulled general retail. The convenience store is basically single-tenant retail. And then just looking at the sale info, it looks like it's ranging from about $30 a square foot to $111 a square foot based on sale price for square foot values. And this was pulled from, I think it was back to 2014. So you scroll through, the cost will give you a little bit more information regarding the buyers and sellers. But really, I'm just trying to show that the range here of sale comps that I pulled, all of these should be market. There's no non-complaint sales included in here. It's really $30 to $111 a square foot. Meanwhile, our subject property here was assessed at $126. So definitely a disconnect there in regards to the sale comps that I found. And it looks like the majority of these are going to be newer than our store as well. I think the oldest was built in 1970, but they're all around the same square footage of about 2,000 square foot up to 5,000 square foot of retail space. And that was all I had on this.
Okay. All right, go ahead, Nikki.
Hi, this is Nikki Morgan, and Team Stansell did a good job describing the property. It's 2,584 square feet of average quality convenience market built in 1969. It is occupied by 7-Eleven. Pages 2 and 3 are an overview of our appraisal methodology, and I'd like to point out that we are required by law to be at 100% of market value, and we are an annual county, so every 6 years we physically inspect the property and give it a new appraisal. And the other 6 years, we adjust statistically. Pages 4 and 5 are the characteristics of the property, and we did use a sales adjusted cost approach on this. So you can see that it was built in 1969, it's in fair quality, or sorry, average quality, fair condition, and that's just due to its age, which does affect the effective age and the overall depreciation used. On page 5, just above the last little box there in solid blue, you see the economic trend of 35%. So this is where we differ from the appellant's cost approach used. We both use Marshall and Swift, but we added a 35% trend adjustment on there because we were showing with the sales and our ratios for commercial properties that the cost approach was not working in this area, that the sales were continually coming in about 35% higher in our, 40 to 45% higher, and we needed to adjust our cost approach up 35%. I'll get more into that when I talk about the sales. Page 6 is the sketch of the property, again, just a convenience market with the awning at the front and a photograph on page 7. Page 8 is the aerial view. It's on the corner of Sylvester and 14th. Page 9 is our commercial ratio for improved properties, indicating that the median ratio from assessed value to sales price is 94%. So after the 35% adjustment we did to retail properties in this area, we were finally coming in up closer to 100% at 94. Page 10 is a list of sales comparables used. The subject, I included the same packet for both because they're both similar properties. So you can see the subject property for this one is the parcel ending in 019, which is subject number 1. Like the appellant indicated, is being valued at $126 per square foot. The first 4 comps are actually gas stations. I wanted to show that we did not value them according to comparing them to gas stations. Gas stations would have come in much higher at an average of $446.97 per square foot. 7-Eleven does not have any gas pumps. And so the retail stores down below, comps number 5 through 17, are mostly retail. I did use some that aren't, that the appellant included in her packet, just to indicate that whether it be retail or a daycare center, a bar, a tavern, and then there was one that was converted into multifamily after the sale. No matter which way you look at it, from low to high, the average still came in at $142.49 per square foot for for sale prices. So this is looking at all sales in this area of Pasco that could in any way be comparable to or converted into a resale space after the sale. And not just cherry picking the lower ones, but giving you everything that occurred, including a car wash, self-serve car wash without walls. The map of those properties is on page, the next page, 11, thank you. So it was kind of all in this region of Pasco. And then the next few pages, just to give you a better indication of those parcels, they're all included. So it includes a photo and the sale amount per square foot of those properties. So the first few are those gas stations that we discussed. And then starting at sale number 5, these are the miscellaneous retail sales. Again, not just selecting the ones with the lower value per square foot, but everything that occurred in the last few years, giving us a higher range, coming in at the average coming in is $142 per square foot.
Okay. Any rebuttal, Ms. Diva-Digger?
I'm just reviewing some of these comps, and I guess I would like to ask if adjustments have been made on some of these that are clearly much smaller than ours, that's going to affect the value per square foot, or the sale price per square foot, I should say. A lot of these are also much newer. So were adjustments made on these?
No, these are just comps to indicate sale prices. Again, no adjustments were made up either for the car wash, which if it had walls and was actually a retail space, would have sold for much higher. Just a general indication of where property is selling per square foot to give us the ratio indicated of 94% of these sales prices to justify the market trends that was placed on our cost approach.
Okay.
And
I don't think I really have too much to add other than the fact that this is an older convenience store without gas, with no recent improvement, yet it continues to take increases year over year, and this year it looks like it took about a 15% increase. So it's just difficult seeing that as depreciation continues to occur for this older building, although no recent renovations have been done. But that's all I think I have on this one.
Okay. Any questions from the board? Joe?
No, I don't.
Okay, thank you very much. You can proceed on to the next one.
This is going to be very similar. The comps, the sale comps that I used on this one are identical to the comps that I used on the previous site. I won't go through those again in detail, but my first page analysis is going to be a Marshall & Foote cost approach again. We're looking at another 7-Eleven. This is owner-occupied space, built in 1964, of average quality, masonry. Looks like I'm using an effective age of 26, although the actual age is 54. That's just due to maintenance and upkeep of a store of that age. Total net leasable area is 3,156 square feet. So I'm just using Street Marshall and Swift cost approach again here. No manual adjustments were made. So convenience store, after depreciation is contributing about $205,000. Asphalt and concrete paving is contributing an additional almost $7,000 in value after depreciation. And then the canopy, which is really the awning that goes around the overhang, I guess, of the building, contributes an additional $11,000 in value after depreciation. So the total improvement value for Marshall & Swift cost approach is $223,710. And then incorporating the land value, which was $127,300, coming up with a total indicated value of $351,000. That's in line with last year's value, it looks like. And that is a value of $111 a square foot. And we're currently assessed at $134 a square foot. And I think the $111 that my cost approach is indicating is right in line with the sale comp that I was able to find for CoStar. Looks like that was the highest sale contracted sign at 2509 West Lewis Street. A general retail store sold for 111 a square foot. I think that's right in line with the sale comp, but I will not go through those again. So that's all I have on this one.
Okay. Nikki?
Okay. Again, this packet is identical to the first one that we heard. Although this one is located on Court Street, it's 3,156 square feet of average quality mini mart convenience store built in 1964, also currently occupied by 7-Eleven. So again, you have our cost approach that is in a different area of town, and its trend adjustment was 15% added to cost approach to bring it up to market. You have a sketch and a photo, and the aerial photography indicating that it sits on the corner of Road 44 and Court Street on page 8. Page 9 again is our commercial ratio for improved property in this area of Pasco. The median sales ratio of 94%, and that is after the 15% was added to all retail spaces in that area. So on page 10, when you're looking at the project parcels, it is parcel number 2 and 185. For the value per square foot of $134.57. Again, the gas station prices came in higher, just showing that we did not value it according to those sales, but comps 5 through 17 are various retail spaces that sold recently with an average sales price per square foot of $142.49. So again, still higher than where we have the subject property even after the 15% adjustment. Amount of those sales is on page 11, and photographs for your viewing on the following pages.
Any rebuttal on that, Ms. Kelly?
The only thing that I wanted to point out, I guess, is the fact that this property took a 21% increase this year, and again, it's an older convenience store without gas. No recent improvements have been made, so just difficult seeing that value continue to increase 20% while depreciation is increasing. And then one question I did have regarding the sale comps, Nikki, are those all within Clark County, or are those outside the county as well?
In Franklin County, yes.
I'm sorry, yes, Franklin County.
Yeah, so the map on page 11 indicates that they're all right there in the central part of Pasco.
Okay.
Any questions from the board?
No.
Joe?
I do. Looking at the Marshall and Swift determination for cost.
What page is that?
This is page 4 on your review, Nikki, and then the other. It seems to be quite a large disconnect between the two total costs new. Almost. Or $200,000 difference. That seems quite a significant jump. You would think using the same Marshall and Swift methodology, you would come pretty close to the ballpark, but here we're really off. The previous documentation we looked at were closer, but these are really different. I'm just trying to understand how did we come up with two different, very different numbers? I do realize the depreciation on the one the assessor performed was much higher than the one given by the petitioner.
Correct. You'll notice that on this one we're indicating a mini mart and they're calling it a convenience store. That does play a part in it. Where appraisal judgment, you know, what's the best use of this? We could have called it retail general. And you're going to start off in a different place and then depreciate it down differently according to its building type. And that's where our statistical update of just adding the 15% in this area comes into play. At some level, retail is retail. And so you're going to start out at different places and depreciate them down. But what is retail selling for in Pasco? 142 square foot. So when you're using a market adjusted cost approach, you have to realize there's more emphasis on the sales of similar properties than necessarily where the cost approach starts out and ends up. Does that make sense?
I think so. You're hoping that even though you do your cost approach, that the market adjustment is going to accommodate perhaps the differences. I would like to get that information from you, if you would, the difference between the terminology, between a mini mart and a convenience store.
It comes straight out of Marshall's. But
well, that's fine. I don't subscribe to Marshall and stuff, so I don't have that information.
There is something that I would like to add in regards to that. So mini mart is classified, and this is section 13, page 1 of Marshall and Swift. And mini marts are specifically classified as stores between 1,000 to 2,000 square foot. So they are smaller convenience stores and service station fueling outlets that sell food and beverages. So in this case, I do think that a convenience market classification would be necessary, which is typically 2,000 to 8,000 square foot, considering that this store is 3,156 square feet. Because the mini marts are going to indicate a higher unit cost and base cost, so that will be affecting the total replacement cost new.
Okay, I don't have Marshall and Swift in front of me, so I can't speak to that, but okay. I would like to just go back to the statistically update every for 5 years, and then on the sixth year is when we do a new appraisal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't the appraiser that was there and named this one, but I am the appraiser that set the market adjustment. So let's just say I had called it a mini mart and it had a market adjustment of 35% instead of the 15. It's still going to come in to where the sales are indicating our market is per square foot of a retail type space.
Okay.
So will we fix it in the future? Possibly, you know, when it's under our inspection area and it's up for a new appraisal, then appraisal judgment comes in on its current, you know, use, property type, and where we're going to start on the cost approach. But we're still going to end up using sales to dictate the assessed value.
Okay.
So you said a mini mart has a market adjustment of 35%. What was the other one for 15%?
The mini mart has 15%. The convenience market has 35%.
Oh.
Convenience store.
The other person, so it's on the right. Convenience store has market adjustment of 35. Okay. Did you use the same as the last one? Is sales adjusted cost approach on this one?
Yes, absolutely.
Any more questions?
So maybe I'm trying to understand. So the market adjustment for one was 35%. The market adjustment on another was 15%. So the comparables don't show us that market value, because you're probably looking more in different areas of the city.
Not so much that they're different areas. Mm-hmm. The same comparables that I provided you in each packet, and not all of them are basic retail. The appellant included, you know, the car wash and the old abandoned building that was converted to multifamily after they sold it. It could have been used as retail before.
Mm-hmm.
So the comps that were provided was everything that could be converted to retail or used as retail in the whole area. What was used specifically to set those market adjustments would have been different, because I would have narrowed it down more to just those like property types. Can I answer your question?
Okay.
Okay.
All right. I think I'm done.
Okay. Anything else? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
This concludes BE2018-16 for parcel 11220119, Southland Corporation, and also petition BE2018-17 for parcel 11915385, also Southland Corporation. The time is 11:12. The board will recess to review the materials and evidence. Yeah, and then we will resume once the board has made decisions.
Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The board is now has completed the review of all of the petitions, and Linda Mays, the chairman, will state the decisions made. It is now 11:57.
The schedule for today included, and today is November the 8th, included five hearings. Hearing number one, VE2018-31, parcel number 119341025. If I got that right?
Mm-hmm.
For Cobia, Washington. The decision of the board is, the criterion for the board decisions is 100% of market value. The decision of the board recognizes that the assessed value does not exceed the market value, and the decision of the board is based on income analysis. The board accepts the assessor's total of $5,277,900. Revise that to $4,453,900. I have that in the wrong column. Okay. Thank you, Shirley. Number two. VE2018-32, parcel number 125450048, owners of Tom and Vicki Solbrack, and we sustained the assessor's value of $862,100. The reason is the decision of the board is based on information on sales of comparable properties, and the criterion for board decision is 100% of market value. The decision of the board recognizes that the assessed value does not exceed the market value. Hearing number three, BE2018-16, parcel number 11. No, I'm wrong here. That is all mixed up. Sorry, scratch that. Hearing number three is BE2018-14, parcel number
34.
Ah, geez.
This one right here.
Yeah, I should be reading from that one. Okay. Hearing number three is BE2018-34, parcel number 108-831149.
Correction,
1098-311149. 1098-311149. Okay. Connell LLC. The board is sustaining the assessor's value of $777,600. The reason is, the board finds there is insufficient evidence to support a reduction of the assessed valuation. And number 21, we are sustaining as per correction made by the assessor's office. Hearing number four, BE2018-16, 11220-1019, Southland Corporation. The board is sustaining the value of $326,000 based on the criterion for the board decisions is 100% of market value. The decision of the board recognizes that the assessed value does not exceed the market value, and the decision of the board is based on the estimated cost of construction less depreciation. And finally, hearing number five, BE2018-17, parcel number 119153185, Southland Corporation. The reason for the adjustment is the decision of the board is based on the estimated cost of construction less depreciation, and with an economic adjustment for market trends. We sustained the land value at $127,300, and we revised the owner's value to improvements of $257,300 for the total value of $384,600. And that completes our hearing for today. The meeting is now adjourned.
Thank you.